Welcome to Talk the Dog, the show where we find a bone to pick and a take to give. These are not hot takes. These is dog takes. Can I talk that dog? Let's shut up and grab some tape.
And we are back. Welcome into the local hour, the Talk That Dog hour. We've got a whole bunch of topics to talk over in this portion of the show, just like we did in the national hour. We're going to be talking some of the most recent recruiting updates, had a recent commit, had another player choose to go elsewhere other than Georgia. What should we be most worried about, or what are we most worried about, specifically us, most worried about for the 2026 season? Kirby Smart revealed a very interesting story about how he ended up at Georgia. Not as cut and dry as you think it would be. We're going to continue our game of player, name that player, and name the play you think of. We're also going to do some blind rankings, apparently.
Yes, we are.
Okay, we have blind rankings lined up. And then we also have some questions from our lovely Discord community over there. So we're going to be doing that to close out the show. But we have some news that we have to address at the top of this hour. We're going to do it very briefly. Jamali Riddle. On May 8th, was arrested on two felony counts and a misdemeanor. He had possession of drug paraphernalia in his car. He was also speeding at a very high rate. Was pulled over for the speeding. Drugs were then found in the car. There was some marijuana found, and there were also some THC vapes. He was arrested, posted bail, is no longer... I don't know what the current status of any of this is, but I assume that he's no longer in jail, obviously. But so, yeah, that happened. Another Georgia player arrested. This one was in Glynn County. So there's no pointing fingers at Athens-Clarke County Police Department. None of that stuff. This was separate near his hometown. All I have to say about this is speeding in general is really dumb. I believe the police report said he was somewhere around 95 miles an hour. I think the police officer who was chasing him down said he was running at 95 miles an hour and Jamali Riddle was still gaining ground from him. So speeding in general, not a smart idea. Having drugs, a lot of drugs in the car and weaving in and out of traffic, driving 95 plus miles an hour, really not a smart decision. So, unfortunate news. Don't know what this means for the future of Jamali Riddle, but that's the current status of that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's not a lot to be said right now because, like you said, the info is fairly sparse. However, I think we can all come to the consensus that this was a rather stupid decision, not only for a breaking the law standpoint, but like you said, if we are going to have things in our car that will get us in trouble, why are we going to attract attention to us that will get us pulled over? Why are we going to drive at speeds that will force us to be pulled over? So really dumb decision, really unfortunate because that's a player who we've kind of gone back and forth on whether or not they'll play for you this year. They're hurt, they might not play. Well, we saw them in the spring game, they might actually end up playing, and now it's back up in the air again because you don't know what the punishment for this is going to be. So, really unfortunate decision.
Yeah, I mean, an unfortunate hit to Georgia's transfer class, and now it's two hits that you've taken with this transfer portal class this year. Amarius Williams suffered an ACL injury, not expected to play this year, who was like the crown jewel of this transfer portal class, an edge rusher, a guy that can get to the passer, something that Georgia needed. He's not going to play this season. And then Jamali Riddle, who I would say was the second most exciting player in Georgia's transfer portal class, a guy that balled out at East Carolina, looked like a really promising football player, was from the state of Georgia, going to help out the DB room. And now I don't know if he's going to play this year. I would just leave it at that right now. Don't know if he's going to be playing for the University of Georgia. So two rough hits to the transfer portal class already. Now, you still got Dante Dowdell. You still got Isaiah Canyon. You have other players in this class who could still make it a very strong transfer portal class, but not exactly off to a great start there. But we're not going to harp on that news too much more. Just had to address it, something that we have to address as a show that does an hour dedicated to Georgia football. So moving on. Let's talk about some good news. Tamoris Campbell, a three-star linebacker, announced his commitment to the University of Georgia. Was that yesterday? I believe it was yesterday, or was it Tuesday?
The last 36 hours that all bled together for me. So
I think it was yesterday, but he announced his commitment, some positive momentum rolling into the program for Georgia on the recruiting trail. On Tuesday, we did a segment of, is it time to panic? What's going on with the recruiting class? We've lost three commits, one of them being a five-star cornerback in Dante Wright. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Doesn't seem like you got a whole lot of steam going into the summertime. And then you get this guy, you get Tamoris Campbell. And while, no, it's not a five-star prospect, it's not a four-star prospect, what we can tell you, and we're actually going to save to watch the film towards the back half of the show, because Brooks might make an appearance. He might be here.
Oh, you just ruined the surprise.
They had to stay for the local hour to get the surprise, and it may or may not happen. We'll see. Maybe fair. I'm just telling a little lie. But Tamoris Campbell, a prospect that it seems like Georgia really likes. It seems like there's a whole lot of room to grow, and he's only going to get better with age, and he's only going to get better by the time he gets into a college weight room. Like, once he gets into the strength and conditioning room at Georgia, things are really going to get better. And his ceiling, it's a high ceiling take, I would say, with already like a pretty good floor on him as well. It's not to say that this is kind of a stab in the dark. We're hoping it hits. They're very high on Tamoris Campbell out of Florida. So good pickup for Georgia there. Now, unfortunately, with the good news, there also came some somewhat bad news today as Peter Bork announced his commitment to Virginia Tech. This was a prospect where yesterday, if you asked anybody, I would say that they probably told you he was going to Georgia. And then you wake up this morning, Virginia Tech is now the leader. They closed the window there. He is now going to be a Hokie. Now, the simple thing to do, and what most people are probably doing, is, well, obviously he went to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech upped the offer. He got more money. They're offering double or triple or whatever it was compared to what Georgia was. That's the easy way to take it. But I would remind a lot of people that this is a kid from Massachusetts, and Penn State has been in the mix for a long time. In fact, they were still kind of in the mix up until his commitment today. And James Franklin was the head coach at Penn State. They've had a relationship for quite a while, and now he's over at Virginia Tech, James Franklin, that is, and now Peter Bork is going to go over to Virginia Tech. Like, those two have built a long-lasting relationship over the years. They're very familiar with one another. So, yes, maybe money played a role in this, but I would also just give the props to James Franklin and Virginia Tech for continuing to build out that relationship and continue to keep tabs on Peter Bork and not give up on that one. Because if this were a Georgia situation where Georgia landed a kid that they had been recruiting since the eighth grade, we would tip the cap and say, hey, good on Kirby Smart and them for getting in early on this kid and continue to build on that relationship and really playing this one out. And it ultimately ended up being in their favor. Like, tip your cap to James Franklin and Virginia Tech for being able to pull that one out, especially there down at the end of the wire. But
I'm glad. Can we change something about how we talk about college football recruiting?
Sure.
I am so tired of a recruitment going down to the wire, of it being between two programs, of it being a high-profile recruit that people aren't necessarily sure about. It gets down to signing day, and he player commits to whether it be school A or school B. And if he commits to school A immediately talks around about how, man, our coach just put school B in a locker. Our coach just did this. It happens on national pundits. They talk about, man, boy, they just shoved this coach in a locker. They out-recruited the hell out of him. This did not happen. I've seen three separate posts today from Virginia Tech accounts, from Miami accounts, and from a national covering account that Kirby Smart is getting put in lockers by James Franklin already. That is not at all what happened. When you get put in a locker, you get absolutely out-recruited. You get absolutely diminished. You don't stand a chance. It is over from day one. Up until probably about, 12 hours ago today, we didn't know where this kid was going. So can we change the language around, oh, so-and-so got put in a locker? It's the equivalent of kicking a game-winning field goal against a team and then boasting to the fan base about how you kicked their ass. That's not really what happened. You won, and you deserve to celebrate, and that's fine, but let's not have a factual inaccuracy because we're saying you got put in a locker here. It was a very close recruitment.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to really get a gauge on recruiting and what overall is like the takeover in a recruitment, like what actually wins over a kid. Now, sometimes it seems like it's pretty cut and dry of money played a role or this played a role or whatever. And other times I would say that a good coaching job or a good recruiting job by a coach gets overshadowed by the fact of now these players can get paid. So now all anybody wants to talk about it and say is, well, he just took the biggest bag. That's as simple as that. He just wanted more money. He doesn't care about anything else. He just wants more money. I think you can kind of chop it up to both of them in Peter Bork's circumstance. Yeah, he got some more money to go to Virginia Tech, but also the Virginia Tech staff did a really good job on recruiting him, and it paid off for them. I mean,
definitely,
they played both sides of it. So, some good news, some bad news, however you want to take it. Still a long road ahead in the recruiting trail. In fact, Georgia's got a massive weekend coming up on the recruiting up front. I believe this is the weekend of the scavenger hunt. A lot of high-name prospects. If you want those names, go over on to patreon.com/BrooksAustin.
Patreon, good job.
And you can find out the names that will be on campus for the annual Kirby Smart scavenger hunt, where all the players and recruits come on campus and then they have to find Kirby Smart. That's the scavenger hunt. So big recruiting weekend for them going on. Maybe some things come out of that. So we'll see where things go. But again, nothing to panic about. I know there's a lot of jokes going around about how Georgia's only taken three stars. Georgia's three-star U now. The class is full of three stars, all that good stuff. There's a long way to go. And those three stars who are three stars now, you have no idea what they're going to be ranked by the end of this cycle. So, and remember, let's point this out too. Donnie Glover was a three-star. Zakai Helton was a three-star. Donnie Glover started for Georgia last year on the offensive line. Zakai Helton going to play for Georgia on the offensive line this season. Tyreek Green was, I believe, early on in his recruitment, like one of the first time when he first committed to Georgia, he wasn't some five-star prospect or top 100 player at the time, I don't believe. Like, that was one that was kind of like, all right, taking a local in-state kid, going to play for Georgia this year. So I know we talk about it all the time with how don't pay attention to the rankings. Rankings don't matter. Georgia doesn't care about rankings. But just because the kid is a three-star doesn't mean a hill of beans to Georgia. If he's good enough to play, he's going to play. And yeah, they have a high hit rate so far.
You guys
far.
Love reminding everyone that Ladd McConkey was a three-star. Stetson Bennett was a walk-on.
A.D. Mitchell was a three-star.
So don't look at this and be like, oh, we're only getting three stars now. Georgia sees something in this kid that they very much like. So be excited for it.
Trust the process. For trust sure. All that good stuff. All right. Well, since we covered some good and bad news, let's just talk about what we're most worried about this season. Go ahead and continue on that.
You want to throw a blind ranking in there real quick?
Yes, I forgot about blind rankings.
We'll hit a quick little blind ranking. All right. I have three categories for you, Jay Will, and I want you to pick from one of them.
All right.
First one I have is plays from the 2012 and 2013 season.
Oh, gosh.
Narrowed it down for you. Yeah, you made Tuesday really tough for me, so I'm making it tough for you.
First off, that's also me relying on my ability to recall plays from that season.
These are notable plays. I didn't do like, oh, third and seven, what does Matthew or Aaron Murray what does Aaron Murray
You're
do?
You're not gonna Tiger Woods and be like, on the ninth hole, what shots did you take? Or like ten years ago.
This is like, these are plays that if you're a Georgia fan, you should remember.
Okay, what are the other categories? Those,
players to wear number seven. Or game day environments. Now, these are all games that I know you attended.
Okay. Let's go game day environments.
All right, we're going to blind rank these five game day environments, starting out with the 2019 Georgia versus Notre Dame game.
All right. So, not to spoil anything, but there is only one other game that I have attended where I would put that environment ahead of the Georgia-Notre Dame game. So, for that reason, I'm going to stick Georgia-Notre Dame 2019 at number two.
All right, so that's
that was the introduction of the red LED lights lighting up Sanford Stadium, a night game. It was one of my first games that I attended as a college-age person at the University of Georgia. It was a really fun time. Great environment.
All righty. Moving on, we have 2022 Tennessee.
This is the one. This is the one that I hold in higher standard compared to 2019 Georgia Notre Dame. This is number one for me. It is the craziest, most ruckus environment I have ever seen before. I can remember looking. So I'm in the student section, kind of further back, so kind of towards the top of the student section. And to my right are Tennessee fans. There was quite a few Tennessee fans that showed up to that game. I can just remember looking at the faces of the Tennessee fans, witnessing what Georgia fans were doing in the middle of this game, of the noise that they were making, the constant noise, the performance that Georgia was putting on. It was one of the craziest environment, I should say, that I have ever been to.
I think there's a really great picture of like an older Tennessee fan covering his ears while everyone's screaming.
Oh, it was that, man.
It was a fantastic environment. Oh, and then the rain starts, and instead of people mailing it in, it gets louder.
Oh, it just got even better.
It was a magical environment. Like, for what, by the way, a game that wasn't really that great.
Yeah,
Georgia
in hindsight,
owned that game from the second drive on. Mm-hmm. Like after the fumble and forcing a field goal, that was Georgia's game.
There was so much tension that built up that week because Tennessee got ranked number one in the college football playoff polls. Yep. And then Georgia was ranked number one in the AP poll. So it was number one versus number one. Tennessee fans think, like, this is their year. They're going to walk into Athens and beat Georgia. And Georgia just steamrolls them. Like, that tension just was released over the next four quarters. The series where Javon Bullard has like three sacks in a row.
Yes.
I can still remember the utter amount of noise that was created during that time.
I think it got loudest for me when, was it Tyrion Ingram-Dawkins recovers that fumble?
Yes.
When the pop was like, oh, they're about to blow it open. Now, unfortunately, Branson Robinson fumbles, I think, the very next, the next play. But that, for that brief moment, it was like, dude, this place is rocking. All right. The number three game that you have to rank. The 2024 Tennessee Tech game.
It's number five.
It's number five. All right.
It's number five. You're going to do some silly crap where you give me two of those cupcake games, aren't you?
Hey, man. Don't shoot the list maker, man. You're blind ranking here.
All right. Well, it's good, number five. Bad.
The number four game that you have to rank is the 2025 Texas game.
Okay. Let me think about this. Was there another game that I attended that had a better environment that hasn't been named yet than Texas this past season? I really got to dig deep and try and remember all the games that I've been to now. I'm going to put this one at number three, I think.
Okay.
I'm going to put it at number three.
So you have number one, the 2022 Tennessee game, the number two, 2019 Notre Dame, number three, 2025 Texas, and number five, 2024 Tennessee Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Your fourth best environment on your list. Congratulations, J. Will. It is the 2016 G-Day game.
Ah, I'm perfectly fine with that.
That is a very good.
That is dream scenario right there.
And honestly, I feel like I was setting you up for failure there. You did a perfect job with,
man,
this.
That was fantastic, yes. I was there for the 2016 G-Day game, and it was great.
It was a great environment. Fantastic. For a spring game, my God. I certainly better than a Tennessee Tech game at noon.
It was hot as crap. But I enjoyed it.
Both games were hot.
Sat in the nosebleeds. I enjoyed it.
I will say, the Ludacris performance, a little bit disappointing. Dude. Hearing Ludacris was coming to town and then sitting in the west end zone and being like, ah, damn, he's all the
way
over there.
It was so bad that Kirby Smart, in an interview that I watched today, completely forgot that Ludacris performed at his first G-Day game. Like, when it was mentioned in the interview, he was like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. Like, had no recollection of Ludacris being there.
Here's the thing, though. That doesn't surprise me at all. Kirby Smart, from everything I've seen, is that when he touches the field at Sanford Stadium, the only thing that is important, unless he is there for a concert, the only thing that's important is his team. It would not shock me if Ludacris completely went out of his mind.
Yeah, it's fair. All right.
Shall we talk about our worries for the season?
Yes. This is a therapy session, essentially. Just go ahead and dump whatever worries you got coming into this season, just go ahead and let it out.
Do you want to go first? Do you want me to express
no,
my first
go thing? Ahead. You're the one that brought this to the table. I'm concerned about your mental health right now. Why are you so worried, Christian?
Let's get this one out of the way, because this is something everyone worries about at every part of the season. Every fan goes through this. It's not ordinary to Georgia. It is every fan's worry: injuries. There are at one wrong step, one funny movement, and you've lost a starter for the year. It could happen to anyone. It could happen at any time. That is always in the back of a fan's mind. I think that is legitimate to say that it's at the top of both of our lists.
My biggest worry about this season, I would say, is...
Excuse me. It's not my biggest worry. It's just what I have first. Sorry.
Right. But I would say what I'm worried about most going into the season is... the players that Georgia put all of their eggs in their basket into of taking another jump and banking on developing of these players doesn't exactly pan out like they thought it would.
Okay.
For example, this plays into the wide receiver room. Like, that is littered with players that Georgia is banking on the development of those players, of Talon Taylor, of Thomas Blackshear, CJ Wiley, all those guys, Tyler Williams, even Sakovia White-Helton to an extent, banking on development there, banking on the development of the edge room, the pass rushers, guys like Darren Ikenogben, guys like Isaiah Gibson, Chase Linton, the likes of those players, like that happening, where It was very clear Georgia's message this offseason was, we are banking on the fact of retention. We are banking on retention. We want to maintain the players that are on our roster now, and we're going to hope and pray. I shouldn't say hope and pray. We're going to put our trust in the fact of what we do here, and when you are instilled into Georgia for multiple seasons, that's when you're going to reach your max capacity as a player. If it just doesn't click and pan out like they think it will.
Yeah, I certainly think that's a fair worry. Another worry I have is you keep playing with more and more fire. And the way I look at it this way is 2022, went back and watched that game. I thought about it. I was like, man, other than Missouri and a very good Ohio State team, you didn't sweat a whole lot.
No.
2023, you got out of an Auburn game that was kind of a sweater, had some more sweaters down the road. But other than that, nothing too bad. And then you see it as time goes on, there's just more and more close finishes, more and more, man, we got lucky to pull that one out. And you look back at the season last year, you could have lost to Ole Miss. You could have lost to Tennessee. You very well could have lost to a handful of other teams. So looking at it and you're just going, man, they've played with fire. And it seems like the fires get bigger and bigger and bigger every year. At some point, they're going to become too much to extinguish. That's something that worries me this year, because maybe you aren't able to come back from a 10-point deficit in the second half. Maybe you can't find a way to go perfect in a game and win. Maybe you don't get that 4th-and-6 conversion this year. Maybe you don't have your opponent miss a field goal. So the more fire you play with, the more likely you are to get burned. And I don't feel like Georgia's gotten really burned yet.
The cardiac dogs. That's what they've been. I mean, that is the definition of what Georgia has been.
At some point, you're going to have a heart attack.
Yeah, it certainly probably revealed some potential issues for some people, because every single weekend, every game you go into, it feels like you know you're about to be locked in for four quarters. And maybe that's just the new world of college football. And if that's the case, we're probably deteriorating the lifespan of ourselves as we speak. Every passing college football. Yeah, with pride, might I say. I will willingly do this. I'll do it with a smile on my face. I wouldn't want it any other way. But boy, it does make you really grateful and kind of think back of, man, maybe I took that for granted of just how dominant Georgia was for 3 years, really, over the 2021, 2022, 2023 seasons. Of there was a lot of games you walked into knowing, all right, we're going to win this by 20 points, and that's that. Mm-hmm. We just know that for fact.
To the point where if you were trailing after the first quarter, like, what the hell is happening?
Oh, God forbid it was a one-score game.
Dude, I remember the 2023 South Carolina game where Spencer Rattler goes electric in the first quarter, and Georgia's down, I think it was 13 points. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't crazy. And everyone in the stands is looking around going, like, what? We fire everyone. Bench Carson.
Get him out of here.
Get Mike Bobo out. Like, that's where it started. And I think it's to a degree, only gotten more apparent now.
For sure. All right, do you want to do blind rankings again, or do you want to do...
Oh, I have a few more worries. Yeah.
Oh, well, I thought it was just name your one big worry. I have my one big worry.
Oh. Well, we can do that.
You said, what are you worried about most?
Well, I don't want to be the sky is falling type guy here. I've got like four or five.
No, as our residential Auburn fan, you need to be that. Tell us what the Georgia Bulldogs need to be worried about, Auburn Kirby.
Come on, man. While Brooks is in
present.
Here. You and I are supposed to be friends. Another worry I have about Georgia this season is, what if this transfer class doesn't pay off? And judging by the news that we got today and what's happened to Amaris Williams, like, there's a real reality where a lot of the key players and guys that you were excited about this season don't necessarily pay off for you. Like, think about this, Jay Will. What would Georgia's season look like last year if Zachariah Branch was half the player he was?
I mean, you probably lose a few of those games,
right?
That were really close.
And that's what worries me, is like, what if you don't? And I'm not saying everyone has to have Zachariah Branch levels of impact, but what if this transfer class just doesn't pay off like last year's did? Like, even as much as, you know, people say Noah Thomas was a disappointment, he was a massive death piece for you when Colby Young went down.
Mm-hmm.
Zion Branch, a guy who, again, wasn't a otherworldly star for you, was a massive performance. Had a massive few plays for you when other players went down. So what if your transfer class does not have that? And the major thing that I'm most worried about now, it's not necessarily explosiveness, offensive lulls.
Yeah.
What are we going to have that third quarter slump where For the first six drives of the game, Georgia's having six, seven-play drives. They're scoring points. They're at least getting field goals where, and then the next three drives, it's, hey, three and out, three and out, three and out. That can't happen this year. I'm not even as much worried about explosivity. The offensive lulls is what's worrying me most. So those are the worries that I have.
Yeah, I mean, can't have a game like you did against Georgia Tech last year. You don't want to see that where it seemed like Georgia was peaking at the right time. The offense was really going at a great rate at that point in the season. And then you get into the Georgia Tech game and it seemed like things were falling apart. Georgia's offense had gotten out of rhythm. And then you had an SEC championship game the very next week. So definitely would like to avoid those for sure.
All right. Let's do another blind ranking, shall we?
Let's do it.
You have plays from 2012 to 2013 or players to wear number 7. Which would you like?
Players to wear number 7.
All right. The first player we have on this list to wear the prestigious number 7 for the Georgia Bulldogs is DeAndre Swift. Where would you like to rank him?
I'm banking on another player being here, the obvious one to wear number 7, banking on him being on this list. So for that reason, well, let me think about this. No, yeah. DeAndre Swift, number 2.
DeAndre Swift at number 2, I think that's a pretty fair assessment of it. It's fantastic running back for the Georgia Bulldogs. Really the last great three-year running back that you've had since Nate Frazier. Mm-hmm. Nate Frazier's going to be the one to kind of break this trend, but for a while from the 20s on, it was kind of you got to wait 2 years to even see the field a lot before you become a full-time starter, or sometimes you got to stay 4 years. Like DeAndre Swift, from the minute he stepped foot, was like, yep, he's gone after 3.
And then you get Kimon Spell, hopefully.
Hopefully. Hopefully. We'll see. All right, number 2 on this list that you have to rank, Blake Sailors.
Great call.
Special teams demon.
Sure was. Is there anybody, I don't mean this disrespectfully, is there anybody worse than Blake Sailors that is on this list? I don't mean that disrespectfully. I just mean, look, is this an automatic lock at 5?
Blake Sailors had a role. There's no denying that. He played that role damn well. Enough that 10 years, 15 years after he played,
I still remember
two guys remember him.
I remember him very vividly.
Certainly a great player, but I think that there's a pedigree here.
Yeah, I'm going to put him at 5.
All right, Blake Sailors at 5. You have DeAndre Swift at 2, and you have Blake Sailors at 5. The number 3 player you are ranking is Quay Walker.
Quay Walker. Yeah, that's got to be a number 3 for me. Quay Walker, number 3. Can't put him at number 1 because there better be a certain someone on this list that wore number 7 or else I'm going to look really stupid.
All right. Your number 4 player, you have spots 1 and 4 open right now.
Mm-hmm.
Your number 4 player that you will be ranking is Matthew Stafford.
Number 1. He's Matthew number 1. Stafford. Thank goodness. I'm not concerned anymore. I was really praying and hoping that I left that number 1 spot open for the right reason.
Look, I couldn't do that to you. That would have been very sneaky of me to.
I didn't think you were going to. I was like, there's no way. Like, I'm trying to think of like players that wore number 7. He couldn't do this to me. Then I was like, well, Lawson Lucky hasn't been named and Lorenzo Carter hasn't been named. I might be in trouble. But I'm not in trouble anymore. I don't think I am.
I was trying to be nice to you. All right. So you've got Matthew Stafford at 1, DeAndre Swift at 2, Quay Walker at 3, Blake Sailors at 5. The number 4 ranked player you have to ever wear number 7 at the University of Georgia is Jermaine Burton.
Blake Sailors, I owe you a massive apology. You, sir, Blake Sailors, are a damn good dog. Jermaine Burton is not. In fact, him even grouping Jermaine Burton in that list of damn good dogs.
This was not damn good dogs. I did not say damn.
No, but you decided to give me a whole bunch of really good football players for Georgia, guys that just poured it out for the Bulldogs for multiple seasons, and then you want to throw Jermaine Burton in my face.
Hey, look, I'll say this. There's only one player on that list who scored a playoff touchdown.
You just kicked a hornet's nest. I want you to know, when I bring back Keep 3, Cut 5.
I'm sorry.
It's going to be hell. It's going to be hell. Disrespectful. Look, silly like that?
I might have crossed the line, but this will stay between you and me. I'll never publicly say
it. Between you and me? We're live on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, we are.
We almost have 100,000 subscribers.
All right, between you and me and the 96,000.
This is as between me and you as Diana Rossini's and Mike Vrabel's affair was between them.
Hey, listen, that lasted 6 years. Now, you watch your mouth. This is going to go a good 6 years before anyone even goes, hey, that's the guy who thinks Jermaine Burton's a better Georgia Bulldog than Blake Sailors. We're fine, dude. We're fine. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that to you.
It's fine. All right. Do you want to do Discord Q&A?
Oh, dude, we have Discord Q&A.
We do have Discord
Q&A. I forgot about that.
Or would you rather do some player play memory?
Let's do player play memories. I feel like you and me have some tensions arising right now. Let's just meet in the middle and have a nice moment of recalling players and the plays that have shaped our Georgia fandom minds. All right, here. We'll start off with a good one, too. When I say the name Jake Fromm, what play do you think of?
Ooh. Really, the first thing I think of Jake Fromm is him whistling Rocky Top after he beat Tennessee.
Oh, yes.
The Jake Fromm play that I remember the most, I would say, is either his pass to Terry Godwin against Notre Dame in 2017 or the flea flicker against Mississippi State.
The flea flicker is definitely my first one that comes to mind. There is also a play in the Rose Bowl. It's in Georgia's final drive where they march down to tie the game at 48, where I think it's on a third down. It might be on a fourth down. Oklahoma has a completely free defender. Like, Jake Fromm is dead to rights, and he sidesteps him and I think completes a pass to either DeAndre Swift or Terry Godwin or something. One of those guys completes a first down. That was the first time where I was like, oh, Jake Fromm might be more than a game manager. So those are the two plays that I think of when I hear the name Jake Fromm. All right, we'll do two more. What play do you think of when I tell you the name Roquan Smith?
Oh, it's the Oklahoma game. It's him stonewalling the receiver on the end around,
yep,
just short of the first down marker.
Yep.
That's the play that I think of every time.
Absolutely. The other one is obviously smoking the Mississippi State wide running back?
The running back or the quarterback?
Quarterback.
Nick Fitzgerald.
Nick Fitzgerald smoking him on the A-gap blitz. The kind of weird one that always sticks in my mind that I don't think people ever really remember, and why would you in this game? It's the Georgia-Auburn game in 2017, the regular season one where Auburn beats our ass. He has a play where he runs stride for stride with, I can't remember if it's a wide receiver, and deflects a pass in the back of the end zone. And at the time, I was like, I've never seen a Mike linebacker run with a wide receiver in pass coverage like this. Like, they're always dropping in hook zones. This guy turned and run with a guy and deflected the pass. Insane. So Roquan Smith definitely has a handful of plays to go back to.
Absolutely.
All right, let's do kind of a out of the ordinary one here.
Oh, boy.
Get some real ball knowledge coming back. Here's a good one. What play do you think of when I tell you the name James Cook?
It's either him breaking open the run against Alabama in the national title game.
Right.
Or it's the touchdown pass he gets from Stetson Bennett against Tennessee in 2021.
I always think of the Michigan Orange Bowl touchdown
where
Stetson Bennett throws just the highest rainbow ball you've ever seen. And James, like, he's getting, like, his feet wrapped up when he throws it, and James Cook is just wide open. I think James Cook had three touchdowns that night.
Yeah, I think so.
I'll be the first to admit, I didn't watch that game fully. It was my first New Year's in Athens, and I was fighting demons. Nope.
Don't have to say anything else.
Just going to put it that way.
Yeah, don't have to say anything else.
Woke up at 4 a.m. to Happy New Year's text. Family was kind of mad at me. I didn't say it back. I was like, guys, listen, I was dealing with something, all right? So, great game, James Cook. Other than that. However, the secret one that I always think of, and tell me if you remember this, this is James Cook number 6 era.
Okay.
It's the 2018 season opener, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
George is beating the hell out of whoever they're playing. I think it's like Murray State or whatever. James Cook is on punt coverage, and it's at the point of the game where the crowd is mostly dispersed. Everyone's gone downtown, so it's quieter. You can hear more on-field action. James Cook is running down the field. The punt returner calls for a fair catch, and you can hear someone hot mic go, hit that N-word. James Cook proceeds to destroy this punt returner and get a targeting penalty and thrown out of the game. That was like the first, and I remember watching this and being like, oh, wait, that was Dalvin's brother. Woo. If anyone can go find that play, please, because it's hilarious.
I have never seen this.
Really?
Really?
It's a hilarious hot mic moment. I'll show it to you after the show.
I really want to see that, because the idea of, one, it being a cupcake team, so like a team that you know you're going to beat, and it being so far into the game that a true freshman like James Cook is now in the game, and – he has no remorse for playing time. So it's, well, let's just go get a targeting call and absolutely de-cleat this poor Murray State player, whoever it was. That's incredible. I have not seen that, but I do want to see it. All right. We have now reached the portion of the show where we're going to start answering questions from our lovely Discord community. We asked them to impose their most important questions, and so I'm going to go over there and read off the first one from 9mil Norm. Will the new Super League have rules about time of eligibility? Will high-end QBs try to stay longer, thus creating a problem with the NFL? Well, to answer your first question, I don't think we're going to need a Super League for there to be rules about time of eligibility. I think they're already working on that. We've talked about it, 5 for 5. It sounds like that's the direction that college football is heading in at this moment. So I don't think it's going to take a Super League for that to get solved. For the high-end quarterbacks, I wouldn't say that your highest of quarterbacks are going to be staying a lot longer in college football, but your fringe guys, like guys who might be the back end of the first round, like they could either go be the 24th overall pick this year, or they could go and make $6 or $7 million in college football this next year as a starting quarterback and make more money than that on top of it. Going back to college football for another year and maybe increasing your draft stock value probably isn't a bad idea. So I think it just kind of depends. Like Arch Manning, probably not going to be one of these guys. That guy's going to go to the NFL draft because he's ready, and also because like that guy's going to be a lock for a top 10 pick more than likely by the end of the season. Michael Wan asks, if you got to have lunch with one guy on defense and one guy on offense and one coach that are all currently at Georgia, who would they be?
Now, this is a very important question. There's a very important caveat to this question. Am I paying? Because if so, I'm not choosing any linemen, not choosing any defensive linemen.
It's
and
fair.
You know what? I'm not even going to single out coaches in that. But I'm.
You know what? Let's do it this way. Let's phrase it if you get to go to lunch with them and you get to go to Bones. You get to, so you get to cut, like, that's where you have lunch, meals taken care of, nobody's paying. You just get to kind of pick what you want and you have lunch with this player. So take money out of the question.
Offensively, I'm going to say Nate Frazier. Nate Frazier is
he has a great personality.
A bundle of joy that anytime he's on a screen or anytime he has an interview, he just has an infectious personality. I would love to sit down and have a meal with him. Defensively, is a more interesting question. KJ Bolden is certainly a good candidate for that role. You know, Justin Williams.
Justin Williams
is
a good one.
I've interviewed Justin Williams 3 times, I think, and he always has a very, like, a smile on his face, doing eye contact, like, very well put together young man. I would love to sit down and talk with him. And then what was the third one? Coach?
A coach.
I'm going to just say Coach Smart doesn't count because that's the obvious one.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'd like to chop it up with Coach Todd Hartley.
Yeah.
Or, you know what?
Solid one.
I need to hear some college stories from Mike Bobo.
Oh, boy.
I want to hear, Coach, what was it like when you were the quarterback with the Dogs?
That's a good one, actually, because the obvious answer probably is Todd Hartley, just because he seems like the most energetic guy on the coaching staff outside of Kirby. Seems like you'd have some great conversations. Since you chose Nate, I'll go with someone else, although Nate probably would be my first pick as well. I'd like to talk to Gunner for an hour. I'd like to really get to know this person and this quarterback and the guy that we cheer on every Saturday. Yeah. I'd like to kind of peel back the curtain a little bit. Because, like, yeah, he's not the most talkative guy. Seems like a bit of an introvert, maybe a little bit, like, from our perspective. But so is Brock Bowers. And I bet if you sat down with Brock Bowers for an hour, though, like, he can hold a conversation with you. He can talk to you. He's a nice enough person. Like, he understands. Like, I feel like Gunner's the same way. Like, you know, he could hold a conversation. And I'd like to know some more personal details.
Gunner is certainly a great answer as well.
Defensively, I'd either go with Chris Cole or probably KJ. One of those two guys.
Chris Cole is a solid option, too.
And then Coach, yeah, I'd probably go with Todd Hartley or Trey Scott. I'd like to talk to Trey Scott about, I mean, this guy's been a defensive line coach at Georgia for multiple years. Seems like there's been opportunities probably for him to leave this place and go somewhere else. Like, what is it about Georgia and this place that makes him hang on to just being a defensive line? I say just being a defensive line coach, but just kind of staying put here and really not aspiring to be much else right now. Like, just loves being here. I like to get to know that aspect of him. Chaz Chambliss Stan. This might be a segment question, but of the last 25 years, what 5 players do you think would have had the highest NIL valuation? So the number one answer is probably Rodrigo.
Blankenship. Last 5 years.
Oh, last 5 years. That's cut. Yeah,
he bad news for you, J.O. Rodrigo's more than half.
I'm old.
Stetson.
Stetson would have thrived.
But Stetson was also in the NIL era.
Kind of.
He wasn't in the modern.
He was doing Vidalia, whatever, farms,
delivering got milk commercials.
Yeah, like he was doing like OG NIL stuff. Yeah. Like if Stetson Bennett was just like straight out paid, like 2022 Stetson, I think he would have gotten a lot of attention from a lot of brands and whatnot. So he would have been a good one. That's kind of a hard question because last 5 years, they're already being paid, you know?
Let's expand it to the last 10 years. Just do the Kirby Smart era.
So I'll still keep Stetson. Rodrigo Blankenship is certainly on this list. I feel like that Sonny Michel would have been a lot more marketable than Nick Chubb.
I think just by choice, Nick Chubb would have been like, that's okay, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good, fam. Sonny Michel would have been pretty marketable. George Pickens, good Lord. Who knows what that would have looked like for him.
Yeah. Brock Bowers, I think, is an obvious answer here.
But he's also in that
Brock
period.
Brock Bowers is also kind of a, I don't really, yeah. I don't. This is a good question.
Jordan Davis.
Yes.
Jordan Davis.
If Jordan Davis peaked like he did now, like 21 was Jordan Davis's peak, and NIL was like, it was a thing, you could do it. But it was kind of just like, hey, smile for this billboard.
Right.
Maybe a fast food chain reaches out to you. Now it's like you can basically do whatever you want. I'm going to go Jordan Davis, yeah.
Then we'll just leave it at that for now. I don't want to keep sitting here thinking that's bad podcast content. Old Man asks, does Georgia have a lack of funds or is Kirby unwilling to pay or both? It's not a lack of funds. I wouldn't put it as that. I wouldn't say that Georgia fans are broke or Georgia's donation pool is broke. It's not a matter of that. I would kind of steer it towards, like, it's not that Kirby is necessarily unwilling to pay, because I think that Georgia pays their players pretty handsomely. They're just not willing to pay what some of these other programs are. They're not going to go bar for bar when it comes to NIL deals or salaries for players on the recruiting trail. That's just not them. Their price is their price, and they're not going to overpay for a player. Like, they have their valuation, and if it gets past that, then they'll continue to recruit them, but that dollar amount probably isn't going to change very much. So I wouldn't maybe say it's unwilling to pay. It's just more so they have a different strategy about it. They're just not going to fork over whatever it takes to get a player to commit. They're just taking a different stance on it.
By the way, I found the James Cook play for you.
Oh, I can't wait to watch this after the show. Are you able to fast forward? Or Swishy Swish says, are you able to fast forward the offseason so we can watch some football? That would be great. Thank you. I'm begging.
Guys,
I wish.
Has anyone watched Click?
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Do not fast forward time.
Don't skip life phases. These are all very important parts of your life.
Also,
you never
just
know.
Get some hobbies.
As my mom used to always say, and she listens to the show, so I know she'll be proud of me for saying this.
Oh,
don't ever
here.
Wish your life away. And see, if we did wish our life away, we would have completely skipped past this part of the show where Brooks walks in and he gets to join us for the last 16 minutes of the show.
Are you going to have to get out of your seat, Jay?
I guess I am. Should I just go ahead and do that?
Sure.
I suppose I should. Go ahead and open up the chair for
me. I'll
make
some room for you. What's the next question to ask, Waller?
The next question we have is from Little Dino Nugget. Top 5 ways to get through this offseason. You, sir, didn't watch the show the other day because we did this.
Just get hobbies, guys. Listen to music. Find something. Go fishing. If you like golf, do that. I won't be joining you, however. What we got next, Jay?
Welcome in. We're doing Q&A at the moment. You're coming in at a good time. No stress. We also left some film to potentially watch.
Oh, my Lord.
I had to lower that a little bit, you know?
What's up, boys? What's up?
Not much. Just doing a Thursday show.
It is about that time of this tour where yours truly is exhausted.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I bet.
And guess what we get to do tomorrow? We're going to drive all the way out of Troy, Alabama. Yeah, for Thomas County Central versus Auburn High. And then
we're already having spring scrimmages.
And then drive from Troy, Alabama to one of those beach towns in South Carolina. Matt Glatzen.
Uh-huh.
Is getting married.
Oh.
They have a bachelor's trip to go to and be sober Sally up there for 3 days. I'm like vibrating off no sleep, and I feel weird and awesome. It's great. How are you guys? Did y'all have a good show?
We have
I didn't
far.
Listen to a word.
That's okay.
It's been
sorry.
Going pretty well.
here's what I've been contemplating whether or not I should say this. I've been doing this tour 6 years, Jonathan and Christian, and 8 of the 12 playoff teams are in that Dropbox file now. It's like 15 schools.
Hell yeah.
That I talk to on a day-to-day basis now, this time of the year for this. It's gotten crazy.
I bet.
I almost want to name the schools because the schools that don't contact me, including my alma mater, embarrassing. Because the great ones, the schools playing for national titles, recruit this state, and they see all they do, they just pull up their timeline. And they're like, oh my God, there's this guy that's seen 45 of these places. Wait a minute. He walks around with a phone and videos everything. And then the rest of you, I'm like, what? You. I'm talking about you. I get so mad at you this time of the year. You. Poop on y'all. Mad at y'all. Every year this time of the year, super angry. Because I'm a nobody. It's not a me thing. It's the state, okay? But the idea that I got 15 of the sport's best programs calling me and some of y'all don't is goofy. And you know, it's not calling me for my opinions. Call me for what I got. What's up, boys?
What's the next question?
What'd y'all talk about tonight? I know y'all doing Discord Q&A. I'm ransacking. Okay. What'd y'all talk about tonight?
So we talked about which programs would have the biggest long-term benefit from a national championship.
I thought it was like has to win.
Well, that's kind of the sentiment of like
Texas has to win.
Well, you need to win a national title because the benefit of this would be great.
Oh.
So kind of that sentiment. And that's in that
sentiment, Texas doesn't need anything. Did y'all see that graphic?
Yes.
$145 million?
But imagine if they win a national title.
Yeah, what are they going to get? $200 million?
It's kind of like what we said with Texas Tech. Like, Texas Tech already spends a whole bunch of money. Now imagine if they won a national title doing that. It's not going to go down. It's only going to go up. How do we sustain this? We spend more money.
Yeah, I don't know if Texas Tech, I think that's more tied to like oil. Whereas like Texas is tied to a bunch of people giving money. You mm-hmm. see what I'm saying?
Sure.
Well, I think Texas Tech has a lot to do with Cody Campbell and like 17 of the basin's richest Red Raider fans. Whereas Texas has like 7 billionaire families and then like 170 multimillionaire families. And that's just in the Austin area.
mm-hmm. Well, this is a somewhat Georgia-related topic, also national, that we touched on. Jared Curtis being in the Nate Bargatze movie.
Yeah. I was told today it was actually filmed in Georgia.
Makes sense.
So there's that.
It's a pretty big hub for
me. Yeah, I got all get off my lawny on social media on that one. I just find it, not weird. Weird's the wrong word. It's a sign of modern times that we have an individual that's going to play a role in a movie before he ever plays a down in college football.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me.
Our take on it was, it's cool to see, though, that this is like a legitimate NIL type of event. Like, mm-hmm. this is what we envisioned it being.
Oh, for sure.
Jared Curtis being paid for his name, image, and likeness in mm-hmm. a movie. He's being compensated for that. That part is great.
I have a new take. I'm done recruiting high school quarterbacks if I'm a college football coach. Done. You're telling me that like a 4-star in general nowadays is gonna cost you about $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Not a 5-star. I'm not talking about what we all deem to be a certified known gonna be a thing. I'm talking about like a developmental. He's pretty good. We hope he might work out. Maybe he doesn't. It's gonna cost you $1 million just to get him there,
mm-hmm.
and for him to sit on your bench for 2 years and develop and hope he's not. Nah, to hell with that. Give me the all-conference guy from the SoCon or the American, and I'll pay him 1.8 because I know he's a thing. I've seen him against grown men. I'm not having to, and I'm not saying Jared Curtis in general. I'm talking about any high school quarterback. We've watched all the 27 guys.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from Garrett Nussmeier's brother, who just transferred, who's playing dudes? Who's playing good comp?
Not anyone I can think off the top of my head.
Yeah.
It's all Jimmys and Johnnies out there that are not going to play college football, that we have no idea. I mean, it's one thing to say like college to pro. It's a coin flip of whether first round draft picks are going to be something. It's a crapshoot in high school recruiting.
To a certain extent.
Yeah. They're like, imagine, okay, without naming any names, imagine a four-star quarterback signing at Georgia nowadays that costs $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Sits on the bench 3 years, can't ever crack the lineup, but loves the Dogs, going to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
That cost me $2.5 million before I realized, uh-oh. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I just, it's such a, I don't know if the guy can even play. Like, the Peter Borg example, for like, they weren't going to pay him a bunch of money, but Vatek is.
Right.
So, if Vatek swings and misses on that, it's $3 million down the drain, or whatever it was, over the next 2 years. I think Lane's doing it the right way. Just give me a known commodity. I'll pay for him.
Yeah, I mean, Lane's, I think it's also
Indiana's Lane doing this too.
Well, to a certain degree, Lane does it the right way. Like,
at the quarterback position, I'm not talking about everywhere. I'm talking about just this position.
But like,
it's so hard to evaluate high school quarterbacks.
Like, how much did they flush down the drain with Austin Simmons last year? Austin Simmons was their guy all spring, going into fall. Mm-hmm. He was their guy. He was probably paid QB1 money, ended up collecting dust on the shelf by the end of the season.
But Kirby, they took two out of the portal last year, not just Trinidad. They took another kid out of another mid-major that never even played a snap for him.
Right.
So I mean, it's a thing that he does. And he did it again at LSU. He paid Levitt a lot of money. And then he took the kid from Elon.
Right.
Pay him a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took Hussein Longstreet, paid him a lot of money.
Right.
So
how is that doing it the right way? If he's
I'm just saying, to me, it's doing the right way in the sense that we know we have knowns at the quarterback position in the room. Yes, they cost a lot of money, but at least we know they're knowns.
Okay.
They can play the position at a high level.
I think you need a happy medium. I think you need both. Because if you just go the portal route, you're also putting yourself at risk of your depth isn't going to be as good either. Because
there's more turnover.
If you're just making yourself a suicide to the transfer portal, like, yeah, you're going to have a known commodity as a starter every single year, but you're not going to have the depth because kids are going to understand what the deal is at that program. They're just going to find a body out of the portal. You need guys that love that place, that are willing to commit to you, that could develop over the next few years. And if those guys don't work out, then you go get the known commodity.
Miami's doing this as well.
Yeah.
Now, it does open yourself into, like, risky situations where you're late in the cycle and you have to go tamper with the Duke quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have a guy.
Mm-hmm. Or you put yourself at risk like Texas Tech did, where you pay a guy a lot of money.
I mean, we didn't.
I'm just saying, though, like, it doesn't even have to be about being suspended for a season.
Yeah. Is it illegal to hire a private investigator?
No.
To figure that stuff out?
I don't think so. But I'm more so saying, like, they lost their QB for what looks like a year. If your quarterback sustained an injury and you just put all your eggs in the transfer portal, your season might just be cooked right then and there. And that might be the case for backup quarterbacks in general, but.
And it could be cooked in the sense that, like, this past portal cycle was not very good. Mm-hmm. I didn't think.
Comparatively
from a quarterback's perspective. So if you're dependent upon it and then the portal window gets around here and the ingredients aren't very good, then you're screwed.
My take on
I'm not saying like solely on this, but man, I'm more it's more of a take of just like the high school recruiting of quarterbacks kind of nowadays is getting bonkers.
Yep.
I have to pay you what?
Yeah.
I have to pay you how much? I have to pay you $1.2 million.
Yeah.
For a 260th ranked overall player because he plays quarterback? And we don't know if he's any good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
you know he's talented, but we don't know if he's any good. That's hard for me to swallow.
My take on it is that it involves luck anywhere you go. Like, whether you recruit the high school, whether you recruit out of college, whether you're getting known commodities, Georgia's gotten two Power Four starters to commit to them as, hey, this is going to be our guy. And neither one of them has worked out. One walked away from the program before even taking a snap. So it's like it's a crapshoot either way. Georgia's best player, best quarterback in all of these guys is a former walk-on that they got back out of the JUCO program.
The real issue, too, with recruiting and having to pay so much for high school quarterbacks is if I get a five-star or a high-end four-star at another position, that player will play immediately. Like, if he's good enough to play, he's going to play. Those quarterbacks are likely going into a room where they're going to sit for at least a year, maybe even two, and the dollar amount that I'm already paying them is just for them to sit there and not do anything.
T- tough.
It's tough. It's part of the nature of the business, unfortunately.
Yes, it is.
Maybe just like just get to tampering early. Like a freshman's playing. Like that's what it shocks me about Malik Washington still at Maryland. Good for him.
Yeah.
For being, you know, loyal to that football program. Mm-hmm. But that was very clearly an obvious hit last year. That kid can play the position. Same thing with the kid at NC State, the Bailey kid, CJ Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised. Both of them are still there and didn't get $4.5 million tampering offers.
Same for Sagabatule. He was a hit at Cal and he stayed. Yeah.
For now.
For now.
Yeah.
But he did.
I think the new head coach did a good job doing that.
Mm-hmm. I do want to get your take on this before we close out tonight's show.
We got plenty of time. Let's linger.
Okay. Tamboris Campbell, thoughts on him?
The new linebacker commit?
Yeah, we have the tape
pulled. I haven't even watched it. I've been on the road.
We haven't watched it either.
So here's what I've been told about him. This isn't just – it reads like got offered 3 days ago and committed. It's been tracked, like heavily recruited prior to offering. It's very weird how they do that. They either – Georgia's like, I offer you at 14 or I wait until you're like ready to commit elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, want to be a dog? Mm-hmm. It seems like those are their two recruiting strategies oftentimes. Do we want to watch this?
We can. Yeah.
Okay.
We have the lav mic right here for you.
Let's do it.
I think listed at
6'1", 220. Is that what I saw?
I believe so, yes.
All right. I'm going to just hold this lav because I'm double chained up tonight and that thing be clanging. Here we go. Now, is this South Florida, Jonathan, or is this Florida, Florida? South Florida. So we should see some speed all over the field. I'll tell you one thing off first rip. This kid moves really, really well.
Yeah, very smooth.
Knees outside the ankles. We're slightly bow-legged in our stride pad. Oh, yeah, we're bow-legged. Oh, yeah. We love this. Okay. Did we get 15 on that, Kirby?
I don't know.
Yeah, old three-star you, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Old three-star you taking kids playing the state title games. This is against Chaminade right here. This is where Jeremiah Smith played. Or does he play at Chaminade?
I think he might have used to. And then used to, I think, and then he's transferred.
Okay.
To some other school that has Miami in the name.
He's not at Miami Central, is he?
It might be that, yeah.
So he went from Chaminade to Miami Central? We're playing at dude programs. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Hey, look at our ability to avoid blocks here in the box, Kirby, on this green dog pressure right here. He sees pass, or he's reading run. Now he's got pass. He's just avoiding blocks the whole way through.
Yeah, classic dip and rip on that first block.
Mm-hmm.
So he did play at Chaminade, and then for his final year, he transferred to Miami Carroll City.
Okay.
He also also played at St. Thomas Aquinas.
Hmm.
So we got a three high schooler?
Mm-hmm.
All right. But all in the Miami-Dade area is what it sounds like. So
not moving across the country or nothing like that.
That's Diabel right there. Texas commit. Texas enrollee, excuse me. All right. He can play ball.
Definitely.
Yes, he can.
Yeah, he can play ball. I think there's going to be a lot of – in the Georgia class – a lot of now this is what I've been told. All that being said, they could rattle off like six in a row because they feel like they need some momentum. I have no idea, but it seems to me they're gonna kind of make dudes earn it with senior tape. I think, especially at quarterback now. I think at quarterback now you're gonna see them sign somebody out of nowhere, some kid from Salt Lake City, Utah, that's got a howitzer on him that ain't nobody heard of that was gonna go to Idaho State. Or something like that.
Hmm.
So,
Idaho State.
With electric senior tape.
Yeah, that would fire the fans up, I'm sure.
So.
We got who from where?
Mm-hmm.
Bro.
What else was on the show sheet today?
We did fan base superlatives. So, we did Kirby's top five, which actually was very loved by the chat.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, first time ever for that.
What'd you do?
Video games.
Huh. What was number one?
Guitar Hero 3.
Come on, dude. Knowing him, Guitar Hero. You knew it was going to be.
Any Black Ops on that?
The Black Ops 1 was I tried to limit it to
which one's the RCXD car?
Black Ops 1 was the first that
the one you could drive and like blow up.
Yeah, no. I'm trying to think if they did it in World at War. I don't think they did. Black Ops 1 was the first RCXD. It
sounds like a Black Ops 1 thing.
Black Ops 3 can burn for eternity.
I don't hate it, but I didn't play it.
If we got jetpacks on, like,
it's overhated.
Could you imagine the freaking demons nowadays with that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Well, now that people have adapted to it, yes. But at the time, it was overhated.
Yeah, I thought it was Black Ops 2. That's my favorite Black Ops. Yeah,
Black Ops 2 is a great one.
Nah, I ain't gonna do it.
All right.
Georgia Tech, Texas A&M, Indiana, Ohio State, USC, UCLA, Tennessee, Florida, Georgia Tech, Mercer.
Shout out.
I'm good. Y'all good?
Yep.
I'm good.
You have the mouse, by the way, so you need to end the stream.
Oh, how do I do this? I got to like wait for a four count and then end stream,
yeah,
right?
Usually a three count, then you hit end stream.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.